Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and as usual, we got a great one for you today. Today, we're actually connecting with the CEO of Carbon TV, Jules McQueen. Jules is a busy lady and a general badass, and she took some time to share some of her favorite hunting stories with us today. So I want to thank you, or send a thank you to Jules for taking her time to spend it with us. Beyond that, guys, make sure you check out our Instagram. We have a large contest going on right now, giving away a bow, arrows, broadheads, some peak refuel, just a whole bunch of stuff. I haven't even calculated the value. A Mountain Tough Fitness membership, all sorts of things. Go to Instagram. It's the top pinned thing, and register there. But yeah, let's go ahead and kick this thing off and let Jules tell you some of her stories. Thank you. All right, Jules, welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on. This is exciting.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I know we had to reschedule a couple times. I had some surprise events on my birthday, and that's when we scheduled the last time to record. So I apologize for kicking the can down the road, but thank you for rescheduling with me.
Well, you know, that's a very good reason to have to reschedule. It sounds like you had a good day.
It was fun. I went turkey hunting in the morning, got to spend a bunch of quality time with the kids. And then I don't know if you've been to the Buckhorn Exchange in Denver. It's it's the oldest restaurant in Denver. They have liquor license number one, and it's like a wild game restaurant. So you can get elk and quail and pheasant and all sorts of fun stuff. And you walk in and there's literally like 40 antelope on the wall, like stuffed antelope in the entire place. There's no square inch of that place that doesn't have taxidermy. It's a cool restaurant.
It sounds perfect.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I thought I was just going with my wife and kids, and then we ended up being there with like 10 friends. So it was a good day. The wife really treated me nice. So that's what counts. Oh,
that's amazing. Good. I'm glad it was a good day.
Cool. So let's do this, Jules. Why don't we let you introduce yourself so the folks know who they're hearing some stories from today?
Of course. Yeah, I'm Jules McQueen. I'm the president, CEO of Carbon TV. That's how most people know me. I have been in the outdoor industry for about 20 years, give or take, maybe 15, 18, somewhere around there.
Wow.
You know, I left it for a few years to pursue other, you know, things, other careers, but always came right back to the hunting industry. So, been around for a while. I've been known as a TV producer, television show host, multiple TV shows over the years. And now I have the greatest job in the world. I get to Carbon TV. I mean, could it get any better? It's just incredible.
Yeah. And for those who don't know Carbon TV, I mean, it's Netflix, but for hunting and fishing and just outdoors lifestyle. And it's great because a lot of things that you can't even put on YouTube, you can put on Carbon TV. So you get the real unedited version of all of these things. And it's great. And there's podcasts and videos and all sorts of fun stuff. I guess I never asked you this before, Jules, but was it your brainchild or were you just part of like a group of people? Maybe you could tell the story of how it all got started.
Yeah, I wish it was my idea, but it wasn't. Carbon TV was kind of ahead of its time. You know, we started off as a media conglomerate. We were Carbon Media Group, and Carbon TV was just a small section of that company. They were creating some original content, some video content in the outdoor space. And then around 2017, there was an acquisition from a public company of Carbon Media, and they actually pulled Carbon TV out of that acquisition. And that's when I came into play. But before that, I actually aired my content on Carbon TV.
Okay.
So I had been airing on the network on Sportsman for, I think, 9 seasons and had a very successful run there. Everything was incredible. But then I kind of, you know, saw that the future was digital. So pulled everything off the network, moved over to digital on Carbon TV, and saw a ton of success there. So I knew Carbon as a producer first before I ever worked for the company.
That's cool.
Which gives me a lot of insight. You know, that kind of helped me to understand what the producers are looking for and how we can be helpful. So, I came into the business on that side late 2017, 2018, early. And they actually just brought me in as a consultant, you know, as the company was transitioning to be a standalone OTT network. Mm-hmm. And I kind of oversaw operations, you know, reworked the company structure a little bit, and then escalated up to become the president within 6 months.
Wow.
and then CEO right after that. So it's been an exciting run. But I think, you know, I really owe that to my years and years of being in the field as a producer, you know, and just really kind of understanding what that looks like from the producer standpoint.
Gotcha. That's super cool. And then as far as hunting, have you hunted your whole life? Was it just something that your parents got you into, or how did you get into hunting in general?
No, I'm not from a hunting family, actually.
Me either.
It's incredible, you know, and I think that's why I'm so passionate now about, you know, projects or organizations or even foundations that are introducing young people to hunting, because that was never given to me as an opportunity. Nobody ever thought, oh, maybe Jules would want to get into hunting, because I was a little girl. So they just assumed I would want to do other things. So it would have changed the course of my life if that had happened earlier for me. But my parents didn't hunt. Nobody in my family hunted. So I got into it on my own when I was 17, 18. I had already moved out. I was living on my own. And went through my hunter safety course by myself and decided that, you know, I wanted to give it a shot, and killed my first deer by myself, you know, just kind of got into it.
Was there any like catalyst, or was it just like, I'm going to hunt, I'm going to just pick it up? Or was there like something, like for me, I was eating a lot of barbecue and I got invited and I was like, you know what, I should probably feel what it's like to harvest an animal on my own. Know what it's like to take that life if I'm going to eat all this meat. And I just sort of fell in love with it. Was there anything for you, or were you just like, let's try this?
It was more of that for me. I don't know if maybe I saw some photos, you know, or something crossed my path in some way. It kind of sparked that inside of me, that curiosity. Yeah. And I believe that the majority of humans, maybe not all of us, but there's something ingrained in us deeply, you know, historically, where, you know, all of our ancestors had this in them. So there's something that's curious about that, even if it's not something we were introduced to at a young age. And for me, that's what it was. I just thought, well, this is interesting and different. And I really loved being outside. So my whole thing was, this lets me spend time outside. It's a hobby, but it's also, you know, valuable in a lot of other ways. And it made me feel good as a person. So as soon as I started hunting, I realized, okay, if I can find a career path in this, and this is before really any other women were moving into the outdoor space publicly. There were a lot of women holding jobs in the outdoor community and the hunting community, but it was more behind the scenes back then. It wasn't as public. But for me, it was, okay, this is going to let me spend a lot of time outside and get to do what I want to do, what I love to do. And so I just very, very quickly, very rapidly started moving into the industry and trying to find a way to work and create a living by being outside and working in the hunting community.
That's amazing. I've talked to a lot of people about this, obviously. And I think you're the first one that didn't have like some kind of outside influence, some person in their life that was like, you know, whether they were 6 years old when that person introduced them to hunting, or whether they were 30 years old, that person introduced them to hunting. But it's super unique that you went out there on your own and tackled it. Cause it's daunting, especially as an adult. You're like, oh man, I got so much other stuff going on. And now I have to learn how to hunt. Hunting's not easy.
There's a lot of mistakes that you make, you know, when you don't have a mentor. And you know, a lot of my friends, I would say all of my friends who hunt, they had somebody in their life. A good example, obviously, everyone knows Jana Waller is my very best friend. And she tells stories about, you know, her dad bringing her up in a, you know, hunting household. And I'm actually close to Jana's dad. He's an amazing person. And, you know, I wish I had had that. My dad hunts now, and we've actually hunted together twice.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's like, you know, as an adult, I get to experience what that's like to walk through the woods with him. And it's really special every time. So, you know, it really has helped me feel more connected to people who were introduced to it in that way.
That's awesome. That's a super cool, like, unique origin story for hunting. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. But
we're here to hear some of your favorite hunting stories. So why don't we dive into that, Jules? Why don't you set the stage for your first story, and let's just jump into it.
Okay. So first story would be, you know, I think for a lot of people, you know, we are connected to the first thing that we do, the first animal of its kind or the first of a species. And one of them that's really special to me was my very first mule deer. You know, a lot of times people will ask you, if you could only hunt one thing for the rest of your life, what would it be? And it's a hard question to answer because, gosh, do I love elk hunting? Yeah, I do. I love it. And, I love turkey hunting. I'm a fanatic. I've got my Grand Slam. I love all of them, but there's something about archery mule deer that really just made me fall in love all over again with hunting. Maybe because it was my first experience Western hunting with archery. And so I think it was probably about 8 years ago, somewhere around there, I went on my first, well, I think it was my first archery mule deer hunt. No, it wasn't my first time going after them, now that I think about it. I had tried to hunt them before, but I was in Nebraska and we were filming an episode around it. And it was just one of those hunts where there were so many close encounters and so many just almost, just you're so close. And I, one time I stalked in too close to a deer and the grass was so tall I couldn't see it. And it was one of those rookie mistakes where it's like, keep the distance between you a little bit so you actually know what you're doing. And just, I remember, walking away from that stalk and just going, oh man, I won't make that mistake again. Well, on the, I think, fourth or fifth day of that hunt, the mule deer had just shed their velvet. And so a lot of them had this dark red color, and it was just so beautiful, this burgundy antler that you would see walking through. And we spotted this deer, and I had to kind of run backwards away from where it was to get some distance between me and it. And he kind of crossed up, and I had a camera got, behind me, and we ranged it at 40 yards, and I drew back and I clean missed, and my heart was broken. Just like one of those, like, how did I miss it? He's just standing there. But the beautiful thing about mule deer is they're really curious. And, when it I sensed that arrow just going right over its back, it kind of bounded away about 20, 25 yards. So now he's at between 60 and 65 yards. I had already reloaded another arrow and I drew back. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to give it one more shot. And I kind of just held a little high, right about where his ear was. And it's almost like life slows down in that moment. And you watch the arrow go, and there's a, a big arc to it. And it landed, and it landed good. It hit him good. And the feeling of disbelief and all of those years of trying so hard and making those mistakes. And we ended up, I put another arrow in it. I had to restock up to it again. And it was an emotional thing because then I thought, okay, well, now, here he is, and and I've hit him, but he's gonna suffer too if I don't get another arrow in him. So then you've got that added pressure, and it's on camera. So I know that everyone's gonna be able to see this. And I had this overwhelming mixture of emotions at that time. It was, oh, I can't believe it. This is incredible. But also this devastation, this sadness that comes over you in that moment where it's like, okay, but he's hurting and it's my fault, and so there's just so many emotions that happen through that. So I ended up getting that deer and he was just beautiful. But I still afterwards had this sense of pride and disgust, right? And I think that anyone who's really honest with themselves and has, transparency with themselves about how they really feel in that moment, there is, I mean, I don't know very many people who only have one single emotion about it. So I ended
That
up
is
going,
the truth.
yeah. And people who say it was just nothing but excitement, well, I mean, but you're also taking a life. And, that's a very serious thing, even if you've done it multiple times. And so I always had kind of this, sense of not remorse, but just emotional connection to that deer, maybe because he was my first mule deer. So I actually went, and anyone who's seen, seen me either in person or the things that I do, I have a very big tattoo on my right arm of that deer. And
Oh, cool.
yeah, so when I went into the taxidermist, or to the taxidermist, to the tattoo artist, taxidermist, tattoo artist, when I went in to get the tattoo, I was just going to get a really small one, just kind of in memory of this deer, kind of, because I felt so connected to it. And they talked me into getting it big on my arm, which was my first visible tattoo. And I love it so much because it has opened the door for conversation that you wouldn't believe to the non-hunting community. Because they see someone who looks like me. Obviously, I don't look like a normal, you know, person who would be hunting. And I've got these antlers tattooed on my forearm. And a lot of people over the years have said, oh my gosh, that tattoo, like what in the world? And it allows me the opportunity to then tell my story about the connection to life and the connection to hunting and how we take that very seriously. And for the rest of my life, I get to look at that on my arm in memory of, you know, the life that I took. And of course, there are, you know, dozens and dozens of other animals that I've taken that I haven't memorialized on my body.
You'd run out of forearm, that's for sure.
I would definitely do it in the space. But there's something about kind of presenting it to the world in that way where it's something I'm proud of. And I'm something that, you know, that I still feel connected to after all those years. And I think that that tells a beautiful story of how most people are who hunt. You know, we really are deeply connected to the animals. You know, we have reverence for them and so much respect. And, you know, I think when anytime people talk about, you know, hunting stories or their first deer, it wasn't my first deer, it was just my first mule deer. But I never get tired of looking at it on my arm.
That's awesome. That's a very cool story. And you've hit a couple things there that sparked up some things in me, like the emotion. I killed my first elk with a first archery kill at all this year. And you know, in the moment, everything slowed down and I shot and it broke and it hit it right where I wanted it to. He was kind of quartering towards, and I just pure excitement. And like, I don't know if you know who Jermaine Hodge is, but he's from out smaller than me. So I shot it and we're calling and he's like, you got it. And I just pick him up and I'm like, yes. And then later I'm like, oh no. But they're like, well, he was kind of quartering too. Maybe the shot was a little far back and we're talking about it while we're waiting. And all of a sudden I just got hit with sickness, being like, did I just hurt this animal? And it's just this roller coaster of emotions. It's 2 hours of waiting. And I felt every emotion you can think of. Like, and it was awful and it was great at the same time. Fortunately, we found him 100 yards away. He probably expired in 30 seconds. But those 2 hours of emotions were just overwhelming. And it's one of the things that I remember more than anything from that hunt was just like how much it meant, and not just excitement. You know, just there's so much to it. Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people can relate to that, you know, the mixture of emotions, especially if you're there with somebody you care about. You know, that amplifies everything that we feel. If you're there with, you know, your best friend or, you know, a sibling or a parent or even just, you know, anybody, I think that, you know, you just kind of, because then you have witnesses, you know, then you have somebody there to experience it with you. And it can be a very emotional roller coaster.
Absolutely. What's funny is the people I was with, I had met them all in that camp. I'd never met any of them face to face before. But now we're all best friends. Like we text every week and we're like, hey, like it just, if you don't have that bond there already with the family member or the close friend, it creates that bond. So it's a very cool situation. And your mule deer hunt is amazing. That's super. It's funny that you got too close. Like that's not a problem I've ever had, but I believe it.
It was one of those where, you know, there were guys across the ridge and they were watching me through a spotting scope and I could look through my binoculars and see their hand gestures and they were all very excited. You know, they were like a mile away from me. And the closer I would get to this deer, I would look through and I would look over at the guys and pretty soon they were like, you know, giving me like, oh, what are you doing? You know, you're gonna
Yeah.
And, you know, it just really, in the moment I was excited and then sure enough that, you know, he stood up and was out of there so fast. And I thought, okay, well now I know, you know, make sure you know where he is before you just start walking in.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've screwed up some stalks that way as well and had people laugh at me. So, yeah, but never from getting too close. It's from doing some other stupid things, but all right, well, let's move on, Jules. What else do you got? Transitions are always a little funny when it goes from story to story, but what are the stories that you bring for us today?
Yeah. So I think one of my other favorite hunts that I think about all the time, you know, like we were saying, when you have somebody in the field with you who you love, it just every experience is better. The meals taste better, the scenery is more beautiful. And one of my favorite hunts of all time was with obviously Jana Waller, my best friend. We have hunted a lot of different things together over the years. And we went to Texas a couple of years, 2 or 3 years ago, and we hunted on Blake Barnett's property down there. And he also has a show on Carbon. And it was just such a good time because we all knew each other in the industry. And so Jana and I, we split up, to hunt different blinds, but then we would also hunt together, at times. And I think it was the very first day we were there. Jana ended up shooting this really beautiful deer that they had actually been calling it Jules Buck because they were like, oh, this is the one Julie's going to take for sure. It's just they assumed it would be kind of in the area I would be hunting. And she shot it on the first day. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I killed your buck. And I'm like, oh, the last thing you have to do is apologize. I mean, it was just beautiful. So, but then because she had already shot, we got to hunt together a little bit, which was really fun. And it's actually on one of the episodes of Skullbound Chronicles of her show. I think it was last season or the season before.
I'll
And
try and look for it and put it in the show notes so people can watch
yeah,
it.
I can send you a link to it. It's just such a fun episode. And there's one scene where it's me and Jana, we're sitting in the blind together, and we just couldn't stop laughing. And you would think we never spend time together and like, oh, this is our one time to catch up, but we're together all the time. So, but it was something about being in the field together and just watching the deer. We didn't even shoot, I didn't shoot a deer with her there with me. We were just glassing all of them and watching and talking about them and reliving past experiences. And we did end up shooting javelina together, which was really cool. Just kind of stalking up and both of us shooting. And I
Was this
actually had
archery or rifle for this hunt?
rifle. It was a rifle hunt. And oh my gosh, we had so much fun. And the photos and the video from that trip that were documented, I still go back and just look through those pictures and I feel so happy. Just remembering the, all of the laughter and the moments. And I did end up shooting a really great deer on the last day. Blake was in the blind with me. He filmed it. And the celebration, Jana just being so excited for me and me being excited for her and that camaraderie. And, I know so many people can relate to that because, a lot of people go hunt with their best friends. And I think that that is a core memory in life. Even if neither of us had shot anything, just sitting around the fire at night and talking and, laughing and the travel getting there together, just all of the above. It wasn't about the animals that we took on that trip. It was just kind of some time in the field together where, yeah, we're still working and we were still creating content and we were still doing what we were supposed to be doing. But, it was one of my favorite memories of all time, even all of the other things I've ever been able to do. I've been very blessed. I've been able to go do a lot of really cool stuff. But that hunt with her was special because it was with her. And, over the past so many years, most of my hunts have been documented. So you've got a camera guy, you've got camera equipment, you've got responsibilities, you have to kind of, do things. It's a lot of work in the field. And, I can kind of see both ways where it would have been really fun for us to just be on that trip and having fun and hanging out. But to be able to go back and relive those memories, I'm very passionate about people who document their experiences in the outdoors to share with others who maybe don't have those experiences. And so that's one where I was actually really happy that it was being documented instead of, us just off, having a good time. Because I think a lot of people got to see our friendship, and the reasons why we've been friends for so many years. We just are so very connected in that way. But also anyone who knows Jana, you get to see when you watch her show or just know her at all, you get to see what true passion for the outdoors is. It's not like she flips a switch when the camera comes on and now she's a different person. She's like that all the time. like 100%, she's all in, head first, excited about every single thing that's happening in the field. She's stopping to look at everything and she's documenting things. And you know, spending time with somebody who's that passionate about the outdoors can only enhance it for yourself. And yeah. So you kind of walk away feeling a little more in love with nature, you know, when you spend time with somebody like that.
Yeah.
I really walked away from that hunt feeling, you know, not just loving her more or loving, you know, the location where we were. It was just kind of, okay, this, it all, now it kind of refreshes that memory of this is why we do what we do and why we work so hard and we're so passionate about it.
Yeah. So, no, I love that story. That's, it was making me think about why I even started the podcast. I'm a newer hunter, only been doing it for like 8-9 years at this point. And the first 7 years were not very successful, but I still fell in love with it. And I think it was going with the people that I was going with and remembering the stories. Like, I can't remember what I had for dinner 3 nights ago, but I can remember every detail of like every hunt I've ever been on, which maybe is why I've started this podcast, because I love sharing those moments, sharing those experiences, sharing those relationships. And I enjoy like feeling the way that other people do when they have those same things and they're able to tell those stories to me. So it's a very cool story. Like the hunting is almost the backdrop to what is the more important, which is the relationships that we have when we're hunting. So that's great. I love that story.
Yeah. And the stories that you tell afterwards, you know, I think that by nature, all humans in every culture, we're storytellers. Some tell it through you know, music, some people tell it through art, some people tell it through video. But essentially we're all storytellers. You know, our ancestors thousands of years ago sat around fires telling stories and passing down traditions and, you know, telling stories that their parents had told them.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that it's really cool that in the hunting or outdoor community, we're still doing that, literally sitting around fires telling stories. And I think some of the greatest moments that most people have in any hunting camp or fishing camp or camp in general, just going camping. You don't even have to be, you know, actually out there hunting or fishing. It's just being outside, sitting around a fire and telling stories and laughing and sharing experiences. I really think that that's what it comes down to. You know,
absolutely. You know, it's funny you say that like humans are storytellers, because I would say maybe a fifth of the people that I've had on my podcast go, well, you know, when I'm talking to them about having them on, they're like, I'm not really a good storyteller. And I'm like, you know what? I bet you'll do fine. I was like, let's do it. I'll record it. And if you don't feel good about it afterwards, I won't release it. And at the end of every single episode, people just get into their stories and they start telling them and they have a great time. And that's all there is to it. And there's been no episodes I've held back, because everybody ended up doing a much better job telling stories than they thought they would. So you're right. I think that it's human nature to tell stories. Only one person I know is a bad storyteller, and it's my hunting buddy. He's awful. He's just terrible. That's why he hasn't been on the podcast yet. When we're in person telling our stories, he'll start and then he goes two or three sentences and goes, oh, I already screwed it up. Michael, you tell the story. And I'm like, all right, I'll tell the story. So he's the only person, maybe he's not human, I don't know. But in general, humans are natural storytellers. And I think it's a big part of what makes us human. So.
Yeah. And for the most part, people aren't there to judge your stories. You know, they like for example, while we're on the topic of storytelling, which is, you know, what this is all about. You know, I give a lot of speeches. So I keynote, I travel around, I speak, you know, to audiences. And one of the first things you learn when you are, you know, in that world is people love a good story. So you have a good story. If you just kick it off with a bunch of data and facts and, you know, information and statistics, you're going to lose people so fast. But if you have a really good story, you've got them. You know, they want to hear everything about it, because now they're connected to you mentally and, you know, there's just something about hearing a good story from a person and feeling connected to them. And now it's like, oh, okay, tell me what you're here to tell me about now that I feel connected to you. So, you know,
it's easy to remember moral of a story, right? It's not easy to remember the moral of the statistics someone just rattled off.
Right.
I know exactly. I can think of one person off the top of my head that I've seen him present twice. And every time I'm like, stop telling me stats. I was like, you're so smart. You're too smart. tell us a story about why this is applicable. Maybe I'll tell them that someday, but for now, I'll keep it to myself.
Yeah. Actually, so I just gave a speech for the Wild Sheep Society in BC, and I told this story. I'll tell it here, since you know we're all about telling stories.
Perfect.
It's one of my favorites, and you know, it's one that it's a story that is true, first of all, but also I feel like there's just so many great elements to it, and this is why I always kick off my speeches with something like this. So, my dad he lives in Oklahoma. And retired military, just an awesome guy. I've only hunted with him one time. Well, I hunted with him this past year a little bit. We went out a couple times, didn't shoot anything. And, but the only other time I had hunted with him was like 20 years ago, which was, it's a long gap of not, you know, going out in the field together. But over those years, my dad has become more of a hunter. He lives on a beautiful property in Oklahoma, big wheat farm. You know, he's out there all the time. He knows what deer he wants to shoot that year. You know, he's getting to be a really good hunter. So he, 3 years ago, was super fired up about gun season opening in Oklahoma. And he was texting me, calling me, just like, oh, one more day. You know, it's almost here. I can't wait. I've seen this great buck. I just want to shoot this buck. You know, I'm super excited. And so I was at work. I was at our headquarters at Carbon, and I knew it was opener for Oklahoma gun season. So I've got my phone sitting there, and sure enough, my dad calls my cell phone. So I excuse myself from the meeting. I get up, I walk out of the room, I take his call, and he's so excited. And he's just like, Jules, I got him. I got the big one. I'm like, oh my gosh, Dad, that's so exciting. Tell me the story. I want to hear the story. And so he's like, he came in perfect. He walked in just where I thought he would. You know, I made a great shot. He just went down. I knew it. I got him. I can't believe I got this deer. And I said, Dad, I could not be more excited. And at this point, he had already taken the deer back to his barn. And, you know, that's where he called me from. And I said, Dad, I want to see a picture. Like, I can't wait to see a picture of this deer. And he's like, oh, hold on. And so he starts fumbling around on his cell phone, and he puts me on speaker so he can access his camera, which I was more impressed that he did that than he shot a deer. Like, honestly, he's not the most tech savvy person. So the fact that he could take a photo while he's on the phone was very impressive to me. So he puts me on speaker and he takes a photo. And as he's sending the picture to me, he says, he's a 180. Jules, I can't believe I got this deer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Dad. Holy smokes. It's a 180. Are you kidding me? And so I put him on speaker and I'm opening the photo that had just come through to my phone. And I'm like zooming in on it. And I said, Dad, who's there with you? Like, who scored this deer for you? Cause I mean, you know, I'm pretty good at scoring deer.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm questioning this 180 thing that you're talking about, Dad. And he goes, well, honey, I don't need anybody here to score him for me. I've got him hung up on the scale. He's a 180 pounds.
Oh, God.
And that is how my dad scores deer. And I thought, this is the most brilliant thing ever.
Yeah, so, no, that makes sense.
Because he weighs 180 pounds. And so now I'm like, I know how I'm going to start scoring all my deer, because that's what my dad taught me. So,
yeah.
You know, and now it's like every year he'd tell me how much his deer weighs, and that's what we score it.
That's amazing. I could have sworn you were going to tell us like a mountain goat story or something, because you say you tell this story all the time at these conferences, but that's too good. No. And that's like a really pure way of thinking about deer, right? You're not worried about the antlers. It's just like, it's 180 pounds, right? 180 pounds.
180. Yeah, he's a 180. And I'm like, who scored that deer for you, Dad? Because I'm pretty sure not. But, and then this past year, you know, he shot another really great, and I'm not discrediting the deer, like, I mean, they're really good whitetails that he shoots, and he shot one this year and sent me a picture, and it's a beautiful deer, and he doesn't have a mounted or anything, so I had him do a Euro mount, and I've actually got it hanging here in my office. And
oh, that's cool.
And I don't have one of my deer hanging up. I have my dad's deer hanging up on the wall. And you know, it's just so nice to later in life be able to connect with him in that way.
That's amazing. It's cool that like you hunted before he did. You've gotten him so into it that he's like anticipation, texting and calling, just getting ready for the season, that he's gone that gung-ho into hunting as well. Do you think that's because of maybe what you do for a living, and he's just like loves the connection that he has with you? Or do you think that like that's a nice little addition, but really he's just fallen in love with hunting itself.
A bit of both. He is, you know, he was in the military for so long and, you know, finally retired. I think he just didn't have time. He may have hunted when he was younger, you know, but I don't think it was ever a huge thing for him. But I think now he's obviously very proud of me and what I do. He's proud of his other daughter, Jana Waller, obviously. You know, so they stay in very close contact. And I think it does kind of inspire him, you know, to kind of do more and be more into it. But yeah, he just, it's really cool to see him kind of moving, you know, moving into it a little more. And my mom started hunting too. So, you know, now I am from a family who hunts later in life, which is kind of cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I've only killed one whitetail ever, and I killed it in a public land in Texas, and I had to backpack it out, so I couldn't tell you if it was a 180, 141. I couldn't tell you what it was. But if I ever shoot a deer again, I'm going to make sure to find out the weight and send you it.
Yeah, just bring a scale with you. String it up, weigh it, and that's what we're going to call it. I think it's
awesome.
I think more people should do that, right? I mean,
I agree.
Like him, he's not having it mounted or anything. He's there for the meat. He's a meat hunter. And so for him, that body weight is a really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. You can even measure the does that way, right?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool. That's a great story. Took us such a spin there. I did not expect it to end that way. What other stories do you have for us, Jules?
Okay, another great story. Jana might get mad at me for telling this one. I'll tell another Jana story, even though I just...
Perfect. When someone else gets angry at you for telling a story, it's probably the perfect story to tell.
I know. She never gets mad at me, but she might. So over the years, we've always done this wall tent turkey camp in Montana. Jason Matzinger puts it on with his closest friends. And, you know, I've gone a few times and Jana, you know, has gone quite a few times. And somebody started calling it Camp B-roll because like no one really ever kills very many turkeys, you know, because it's a really tough hunt for people who turkey hunted in Montana. It's like spot and stalk turkey hunting. You like glass them up a mile away and have to hike, you know, and like really, like you put a lot of work in on these birds. And as turkey fanatics, you know, we're just like, it's worth it. You know, I'll hike five miles for a bird. Sure. And so I was out with Jana and we found this group of birds. We glassed them up, hiked our butts off to get to them. Jana and I both, you know, had tags and there was a camera guy with us. And I had already shot my grand slam at that point. So I have, you know, one of everything. And the one thing I hadn't shot was a bearded hen. And in, you know, a lot of states, it's totally legal. If the beard is over, I think 3 inches, you know, it counts as a legal bird. So I wanted to take this bearded hen that was in the group. And so we belly crawl up to this ridge and the birds are right there. I mean, just literally right over the edge. And Jana, like I was saying, she's so passionate and she gets so excited about everything in the field. And she is hardcore, you know, like if there's an animal there, like Jana's probably going to get it. And I said, there's a bearded hen in the group. And she's like, oh my God. Okay, cool. On the count of three. Well, there was no 1, 2, 3. Jana stood up and shot the tom that was in the group and all the birds scatter and leave and stand up and start running. Cause I'm like, ah, what have you done? You know, like what happened to the 1, 2, 3, Jana? And she's like, I got so excited. I'm so sorry. And she just has been apologizing for years for, you know, not counting to three, but you know, I forgave her pretty quickly. And, you know, so she killed this, it was a beautiful tom and it was just a really pretty day. It was nice and sunny and warm. And we have some really great photos from that day too, where we considered it our bird, you know, even though, you know, Jana got a little excited and pulled the trigger without saying anything. You know, as we were taking photos and we carried that bird out and we hiked back to camp together and I kind of felt like I had got, you know, filled my tag too, because I got to at least witness it and be there with her. So, you know, that was really special. That was cool.
That's a funny story. I know plenty of friends that would do the exact same thing. Yeah. So
it's like on the concrete, boom, pull the trigger. You don't even count.
Yeah. Yeah. And that mountain spot and stock turkey hunting, that's no joke. That's what I did on Tuesday for my birthday. And I had my bow in one hand. I have, I'm not a very good mouth caller, so I use a slate or a pot call. And then I also have a, like these like foam decoys. So I've got my bow on my bow hitch, if you're familiar with a bow hitch. And then I'm holding my decoy in my hand and then just like two fingers holding the slate call and then my other hand calling. And then if anything happened, I just threw everything down and grabbed my bow. And I went like 6 miles into the mountains, you know, 1,000 feet of elevation. I got into them, but it was just so windy. I couldn't really hear anything. But yeah, that mountain Miriam turkey hunting is it's no joke.
It's tough. And they're cliff divers. They will jump right off the edge of a cliff and you'll never see them again. You know, as soon as they get a sense that you're there, we've had so many just nosedive off the edge and, you know, nothing you can do about it. We've been killed miles for turkeys and I haven't.
I bet. You know, you said something about glassing for them. I was like, I never thought about glassing for turkeys before. Mm-hmm. So maybe I should try that. That being said, it's like 1,000 feet down, cross a river, 1,000 feet back up if I were to glass anything in the spot that I do turkey hunting. So it's a lot of work, but it might be worth it if it comes to the end of the season.
Yeah, it is. You know, for those of us who love turkey hunting, it's worth it. You know, and I think people who don't turkey hunt kind of look at us like we're crazy people. You know, like, why would you do that for a bird? And then you get the ones who say, oh, there's 30 of those in my mom's backyard. You know,
every time.
Every time.
Every time.
Like, it's not the same thing, though. We like things that are really difficult to get close to.
Yep. I remember. So every time I've ever walked out turkey hunting, people are like, what are you hunting for this time of year? I'm like, turkeys. They're like, oh, they're on that side of the road in the private. And I'm like, oh, I know they're in the private. I can't hunt over there. So they're always giving their advice, but you can't do much about it. So
yeah, it is one of the only, you know, animals where people are pretty open to letting you, you know, access their property and hunt turkeys. You know, we've had a lot of people say, oh yeah, it's just turkeys, go for it. Not a lot of people say that about their elk and deer, you know, so turkeys are more like, you know, a community, you know, we knock on doors, you know, and ask if we can go hunt their backyards.
It's funny you say that. I started a TikTok account because I was like, new audience, why not? And so everything I've posted with a deer on it, blocked, banned. Like everything I do with a turkey, no problem. Like no one reports me for turkeys, but any deer, any elk, no matter what, one photo, it just immediately blocked every single time. I had to get my account back twice and I've only had it for like a month.
Isn't that crazy?
So yeah, I think you're right about that turkey thing. People just don't care.
They don't consider it, you know, which I think it is considered a big game species, you know, in a lot of states. Maybe not state, I don't know, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, a lot of people don't consider turkeys to be like, you know, a game animal. They just think they're the birds in the backyard, basically.
Yeah. Ben Franklin would be disappointed. I don't know if you knew, but he tried to make it our the country's national bird before they picked the bald eagle.
Yeah.
Which would have been funny because they're a ridiculous animal, but yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Jules, do you have any more? I'll listen to stories all day. I know I only have it for so much time, but if you have any more, I'll keep listening. Or we could wrap this thing up. Up to you.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I have so many stories, but they're all just like rambling around in my head. I've just been so lucky, you know, over my career to be able to hunt all over and get to see these beautiful places and meet the nicest people.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing. You know, if there's one message that I could put out there to, you know, to the world in any way is people can think whatever they want about the hunting community or industry, as people call it. But it is filled with the nicest people that you will ever meet in your entire life.
Yeah.
And if you selectively choose the people who you allow in your circle, you make lifelong friends in the strangest places. You run into someone, you know, hunting the same unit as you, and they're super helpful. And this is for the most part. Now, I know there are some people out there who are terrible and not great.
Yeah. I can think of a guy who wrapped up a wolf recently in Utah. Was that Utah? Wyoming.
Wyoming. And
yeah.
I'm devastated.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah. It was horrible. I mean, yeah, that has been the topic of conversation in our home, you know, recently. And, you know, as hunter, this guy's not a hunter. That's not the same thing, you know.
Nope.
And, you know, we respect the wildlife and have reverence for them and would never, you know, if that happened here and my boyfriend saw that, it would not have ended well for that guy. I'll put it that
yeah,
way.
No, I agree. And the fact that like he just takes it to a bar, right? Didn't he just take it to a bar? Like that's the kind of hunter that you don't want to deal with, is the yeehaw, driving your truck, you know, just shooting out of your car at night and stuff like that. But when you go into the woods, you know, you can find amazing people. I can't think of how many times I've run into hunters, had conversations, and then be like, hey, when the day's all said and done, we're at this tent, come by, we'll have a beer. Right. And people take me up on it all the time. And it's totally. And there's amazing people in the woods.
The nicest people, and you know, they really care and they're helpful. And yep. you know, and fortunately in this, you know, in the outdoor space, you know, we have this great community of, you know, content creators, for example. A lot of the people who have shows on Carbon, they're collaborating. They're going to hunt with each other, they're filming each other, they're, you know, cross promoting. Really, it's like, you know, all ships rise with the tide. And mm-hmm. the more successful we are in general, each of us individually, the better it is for everyone, especially if it's good messaging that you're putting out there. And if it's positive, you know, for the community. And, you know, over the years, I've just been so blessed to get to go do so many cool things. And, you know, to see wild places that I never thought I'd get to see. And, you know, to not even like the killing of an animal, but to look at them has yeah. been incredible. And yeah. I can't believe I got this lucky in life. And the people along the way who have been there from the beginning are exceptional and brilliant. And they really love wildlife and they love the animals and they invest back into it with their time or their money. You know, a lot of people go out and volunteer, you know, for different projects for wildlife. And, you know, I think that if the world mainstream could see that, could see what really happens in this bubble in the outdoor community, like you were saying, being banned on TikTok for a deer or an elk video or something, you know, if they really knew the backstory and, you know, the full transparency of why it is we do what we do, I don't think that we would have that censorship. I think that things would be very different if people knew the truth about how wonderful the people are and how good intentions they have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. It's funny, whenever I find out someone's a vegan, I was like, are you a ethical vegan or are you a just because it's cool vegan or dietary vegan? And sometimes when you get to the ethical ones, you start having conversations with them like, oh, I didn't know all those things. So they've got their blinders on and they're just looking at what they think is right, but they don't bother to look what everyone else is doing and why they're doing it. And I think we have a lot of things in common with the ethical vegans when you break it down.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I actually stopped eating meat for a while and I didn't tell anyone that because of my role in this industry. And I didn't want it to be misconstrued. I didn't want people to think, oh, she's a vegan now. Like, how weird is that? That's a little strange. Yeah. But a couple of years ago, just to see what it would do for my, because I'm very into health and fitness and, you mm-hmm. know, I've open voice about that for my entire career. You know, I'm a very healthy person. I just cold turkey stopped eating meat and I didn't eat any meat for about a year and it did wonders for me. It helped me out in a lot of ways. And then I slowly transitioned back into eating meat. And for me, it was, it made me be more mindful of what I was putting in my body. So I had to really think about things, you know, before I would just go stuff my face full of whatever was in the fridge, you know, which is what I do now. But, you know, at the time, it was a really good lesson and it helped me kind of relate to people who don't eat meat. And I know a lot of people who don't just for health reasons, you know, and that's okay. But when I was doing that, I thought, oh my gosh, if anyone found out that I'm off meat for a year, there would be this negative, you know, feeling that goes with that. People would probably think of that in a negative way in this industry because of, you know, because of other people who are vegan for, you know, for other reasons. And it's unfortunate that just the choice to stop eating meat for a while made me feel like, oh my gosh, it's my big dark secret. You know, please nobody find out. I would go to banquets, you know, and just like pick around at the vegetables a little bit and think, oh gosh, I hope nobody tries to feed me meat because my body, you know, can't take it right now. So, but anyways, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, it's an interesting conversation when it comes to ethical reasons or medical reasons. So I wanted to kind of experience that for myself and I'm happy I did, but I'm also super happy that I stopped.
Yeah. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I'm that strong to give up meat. I'll tell you, I love vegetables. Like, I have heaping servings, but I don't think I can get up or give up all my protein, my animal protein. So
yeah, it's really hard, and you have to supplement, you know, your protein in different ways. And yeah, but I mean, again, I'm happy that I tried it out for a little while. But I'm also super happy that now my freezer is full and we don't avoid meat. You know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, Jules. Well, let's wrap things up. Why don't you tell the folks where they can find you, if you want to share your socials or where they can find Carbon TV, and then we'll ride off into the sunset here.
Of course. Okay. So anybody who is not currently watching Carbon TV, we have taken steps to make sure that, you know, there's no reason for that. It's everywhere. Our distribution is very big. So no matter what device you're watching on, or streaming or a connected TV, Carbon TV is there and it's always free. There's no subscription. You don't even have to sign in to watch or listen to anything. It gives you the option to. So if somebody signs in and creates an account, there are features that are really nice with that. You can create playlists and favorite things and different stuff like that and continue watching from where you left off. But you know, even if you're just watching on like a Samsung or a Vizio television, Carbon TV is already there. So you just search for the app in the device. If you're on, you know, a mobile, you know, a phone, laptop, tablet, obviously just carbontv.com. Carbon TV is really good with their social media. We have a great team in place who handles that. So it's a really great way to get familiar with some of the producers because we reshare a lot of what they're doing in the field. So I believe our Instagram is Carbon TV Media, and we're also on Facebook, and it's not hard to find there. I'm personally on social media, not quite as much as what I used to be, a little more quiet than usual, just because I stay pretty busy in my day-to-day life. But I'm Jules McQueen on all of the social media stuff. And people who are on there, you know, I do engage, you know, I respond to people if they have questions. A lot of our producers reach out to me through there with, you know, ideas or suggestions or needing stuff, you know, for the business. So I am active on mostly Instagram, not Facebook as much, but
perfect.
I do encourage everyone to go check out Carbon TV. We have just so many great shows on there and the producers deserve it. You know, we have guys and men and women out there in the field creating amazing content of all different types, not just hunting and fishing. We branch out into other verticals like survival, aviation, homesteading, cooking, you know, so it's very family friendly. So very easy to stream lots and lots of different types of content for free all the time.
Yep. And podcasts, videos, everything. It's super cool. And then like live streams of zoos and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah,
so it's pretty great. And I spend a fair amount of time on there. I try and get my kid off of YouTube and onto Carbon TV as much as I can.
Love that.
Because I feel like it's better for his soul than what he finds on YouTube. It's absolutely ridiculous. So
it's true. It's much safer for sure. And we actually create kids playlists. So we started doing that back during COVID, actually, when people were staying home and their kids were out of school. My team went in and created playlists that were things that would appeal to young people. And that way they just click it and it starts playing and it will continue playing each different episode. And they don't have to go through and try to find what they're looking for. So we try to make it easier for the young people too.
That's awesome. I did not know that. I'm going to have to go ahead and look for those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
perfect.
Cool.
Well, Jules, I'll put all the links to everything you just mentioned in the show notes so that people can find you nice and easy. Thank you so much for first off letting me join the Carbon TV family. You can't find my podcast there, but secondly for coming on and telling us some great stories today. They were great stories. They weren't just look at this giant buck I killed. They were stories that were important to you, and that's why I do this. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate you being in our Carbon TV family. It means a lot to us to have you on the network, and thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
All right, guys, that's it. Another couple stories in the books. Again, I want to thank Jules, of course, for coming on the podcast. Couldn't have done it without her. Very happy to be part of the Carbon TV family. Please make sure you check it all out. Links to everything are in the show notes. There's a ton of content on there, and you're going to see the guns. You're going to see the kill shots. You're going to see the things that other venues take off. So it's pretty cool. So thank you again, Jules. I really do appreciate that. To you listeners, thank you guys for tuning in. Again, we're doing a big giveaway. Please check out our Instagram. There's a link to that in the show notes. The number one pinned thing there is how you enter. Again, we're giving away a bow, arrows, broadheads, food, battery packs, all sorts of fun stuff. Again, thank you guys. I appreciate you as we come up here on episode 100, which is when we're actually giving this stuff away. Now, get out there and make some stories of your own.